Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello and welcome to Book Cheat, the book club podcast where I've read the book so you don't have to. My name is Dave Warnicky, and on each episode of this show, we look at one of the classics. And joining me to look at such a classic this week, it's Jackson Bailey and Zoe B.
Yay!
Yeah. Yay! The party house.
Oh, yes.
The
dream. When I think of books, I think party time.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Most people do, I think.
Yeah, I agree. No better time to read a book than in the middle of a party.
My best friend did that once, and it was the most insane thing. She was in the middle of Gone Girl, and she and her fiance dragged her out to this party, and she was like, nah, I'm going to go into one of the bedrooms, and just finished the book.
That's great.
And it was such a power play. I was like, you are so amazing.
Yeah, I think that's awesome.
Storms out, there's a twist! There's a twist!
Oh my God!
You don't even know!
Yeah, I love that.
Mm.
Well, thank you so much for joining me.
Of course.
We've been in a lockdown, out of a lockdown, back in. Mm. I can't tell you. Hopefully we're not in one right now and this is illegal. I don't think it is.
We ain't no knocks.
No, we ain't no knocks.
We won't tell.
But it's great to be podcasting in person, so thanks for coming along. I often ask by asking guests if they've been reading anything lately.
Yes.
And Zoe, first time on the podcast, have you been reading anything lately?
No. The last time I read a book was in 2019.
That's not that long ago.
That's not that long ago, but that's also 2 years ago.
Yeah.
What was it?
I was reading some textbooks for my master's. So I had to read a bunch of textbooks on my thesis topic. So I read a bunch of books called Censoring Hollywood. The Male Form.
That feels like stuff that after you read that, it gives you a license to take a couple of years off reading.
Yeah, I was books in the bin. I'm done thinking for a while.
Yeah, for sure.
Reading.
Do you have a favorite, when you were a kid, did you have a favorite book? Did your parents read to you?
Not in a nice way. Fuck. Oh, this is. My parents gave me textbooks again. So I would have some Stephen Hawking and shit like that. And my dad would be like, have fun. Or a book of botanicals. And he's like, have a good time, kiddo. But my favorite book is Slaughterhouse 5. I have read a book before.
That's great.
Yeah, it's good to prove that I can read.
I've never read Slaughterhouse 5.
Neither have I. Yeah, often requested on this show. Maybe you can tell us about it sometime.
Yeah.
I can't. Okay. That's fine.
Or botanicals. That'd be fine too.
Yeah. Flowers I've got down.
Yeah, you know that stuff. And Jackson, how about you? Have you been reading anything lately?
I have. I read a whole bunch, I don't know, a couple of months ago. And then I was like, I got to take a break. And then I recently ordered a bunch of books that I'm going to start reading again. And also, my partner's been sick, so I've been reading aloud to her.
Aww.
I know. So I've read aloud Bill Bryson's At Home and A Short History of Nearly Everything. So, and it's so funny, I think. You read a book, and you're like, this was a good book. And then you read a book out loud, and you're like, I don't know if this guy can write very well. The amount of paragraph long sentences that Bill Bryson loves to throw out. I don't know. And I only notice this when I'm reading it out loud, he gets lazy and he just lists things. So he'll be like, they made many different things at this furniture store. And as a reader, that's enough for me. And then he'll be like chairs and ottomans and tables and couches. And I'm like, Bill Bryson, you don't have to say everything that they made.
He's not respecting his audience.
Yeah.
Like that very small, very tiny sweet pea fucking word count bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. It's what it feels like a lot of the time. But at the moment I'm reading a book called Alone on the Ice about an Arctic expedition that went terribly wrong. I think the guy's name was Mawson or something.
Yeah.
And he...
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, the Aussie guy?
Yeah.
He used to be on Our Money.
Yeah. He was the Australasian Arctic something. And what happened is it was him and two other guys, and they had two sleds, and they were like, what we'll do is we'll put all of our important gear, because they were going across glaciers, and glaciers have these sinkholes that you can't tell if the sinkhole's there. It's just like, looks like snow, but then you just fall through. And they were like, what we're going to do is we'll put everything important on our back sled, and all our food and all of our equipment. And we'll have one guy walking alongside that, and we'll be on the front sled, which has nothing. But that means we can see where all of the holes are. And then
I can see this going very badly.
And then they're like, they cross over a hole, and they're like, a crevasse. But they're like, oh, well, we didn't layer it. We should be fine. Like, we didn't layer it down. And as they go across it, and as they hear the second sled go across it, they say that they hear like a, ah! But they just assume it's the guy mushing on the dogs or whatever. And then like 5 minutes later, they're like, they turn around and it's completely gone. Yeah. It fell through the ice.
Oh,
and they just didn't realize.
And the guy's last words was, ah!
like, excuse me?
Just dying of politeness. Yeah. I should probably tell you something.
And you guys are having a conversation. No, I'll wait.
I'll just fall through.
You're
the
leaders. I'm just the guy with the back stuff. No one's even remembering my name.
And they made it like an effort. The reason, because they went across the snow bridge fine, and they were like, his sled should have gone across fine. But they specifically were like, you'll walk alongside it, not ride on it. And they think because he was like a guy, he wasn't spread out the weight on the snow bridge.
Oh.
So he fell through. And then that broke the surface tension of the snow or whatever, and his sled fell through. And now I don't know what they're going to do. They got 28...
Someone had to write the books. So.
Yes, exactly. Well, I think the two guys survived, but I don't think it was good. And if I know the story correctly, they go crazy from eating husky liver, because you shouldn't eat husky liver.
Yeah, like that feels like a given. Eat the rest of the meat first.
Well, I assume they yeah, did.
No, they only eat the livers. Yeah, they throw out the rest of the core.
The meat
oh, yeah. Love me some liver.
Sweet, sweet dog liver.
But yeah, no, it's a crazy story. So that's what I'm reading
cool.
at the moment. Yeah.
Well, guess what? I've been reading something.
Whoa.
What?
Get out.
For this show.
No way.
It's good to have homework.
Yeah, honestly. This one came right down to the wire. Seriously. I've been leaving it a little too late lately, but because the world we live in isn't enough of a hellscape for me.
For sure.
I've decided to read a dystopian classic.
Oh, I see.
I have read, which is a reveal to you, both of you, because you don't know what it is. Yeah. Fahrenheit 451.
Whoa!
Do you
know anything? Do you know anything about this?
It's about setting books on fire, maybe.
Yeah,
presumably not only about that, but that's a theme.
That is a theme recurring, and it's slightly more than that, but not much, to be honest.
Yeah.
That is the real crux. He thought of the idea and really ran with it here.
Yeah, I'm excited. I feel like this is one of those books. Sometimes I do a thing where I will Wikipedia a book instead of reading it, or I'll do the same thing with a movie where I'm like, I don't ever want to actually watch this movie or read this book, so I'll Wikipedia it.
So I can fake it.
Yeah, I frequently do that with movies, and then I decide from that if I should watch it.
That's fair as well, yeah.
You can really ruin the movie. I reckon I would have liked that. Not anymore.
Damn it.
What's going to happen. Yeah.
Still save 2 hours, you know?
Well, I think for me it'll be like with Fahrenheit 519.
451.
911.
With that, I was like, I don't know what genre this book is, and I'm like, is it a sci-fi? What's going on? So I think part of Wikipediaing it was... I hate the saying Wikipediaing. That feels terrible. That's no better alternative,
well,
but it's bad.
Your high school like has been drummed into you to be like, Wikipedia doesn't count as a reference.
What? Well, no, but just say Wikipediaing and tell me if it feels good
just
to say.
Googling.
No, but it wasn't Googling. I was using Wikipedia.
What about wikiing?
Yeah. Sounds bad too.
Wikiing.
Well, if you say wiki.
Yeah, good. Come on, that's cool.
Yeah, I was just doing a wiki. But no, I'm excited to find out about Fahrenheit 5.2. 9.5.
Just round it up. Fahrenheit 1,000. So a bunch of people have told me to do this book. You can. There's a link in the description of this episode if you're listening at home and you want to tell me a book or a play or something I should do. And a bunch of people, when I went through my suggestion list, had asked me to do Fahrenheit 451.
Okay.
Usually I read out where people are from as well, but we're going to be here for about an hour if that okay. happens. So these okay, people are from Australia, the USA, the UK, Ireland, Germany, and Austria. So
you could have just said the world.
The world. So thank you to Meg, Thomas Jennings, Thomas Majeric Jr., Thomas Doppelwriter, Kira Crawford, Gregory Gritman, Caleb Janney, Ryan, Josh Scar, Nesta Guijarro, Hayden Rogers, Caitlin Turner, Madison Wecker, Ethan Venables, Hermione, Catherine, Quentin Chalair, Kayla Hodkowitz. It does sound like I'm making these up.
It sounds so
weird. I swear they're real.
From Greg... so many, there have been so many times where I'm like, Andy Stutt.
No, yeah, no, sorry.
From Gregory Gritman. Like, these are all going to be fake. That's the name of an orangutan in a circus, dude.
Great supporter of our podcast. Thanks, Gregory. Quentin Chalair, I said Kayla Hodkowitz. Miranda Norris, Catherine Schuler, Donald Conacher, Daisy Weeks, Gareth Lingham, and finally Anna Langdon from Bristol, who said, I told my English teacher that I'd read it and she wants to discuss it. Whoopsies. Actually, reading it is obviously out of the question.
Yeah, no. For sure.
And that was written in October 2020, so I hope that conversation has been put off for many months.
Fingers crossed.
Or they employ Jackson's technique of Wikipedia.
Wikiing.
Just wiki.
Yeah, wiki. Sorry, that's the way. Yeah. So I usually give a bit of a background. So Fahrenheit 451 is a 1953 dystopian novel by American author Ray Bradbury. Primarily known as a fantasy and horror writer, he was prolific, writing 30 books and close to 600 short stories in his time.
Okay, show off.
Yeah.
But his most acclaimed work is Fahrenheit 451. It was a real success upon publication, becoming an instant classic in the era of McCarthyism, known for its exploration of themes of censorship and conformity, as we'll find.
Mm-hmm.
So it was of the time. He died in 2012 at the age of 91.
That's good innings.
He did it, everyone.
Just you at the funeral. That was good innings.
That's good innings. We shouldn't be sad.
A small applause. The New York Times called Bradbury the most responsible for bringing modern science fiction into the literary mainstream.
Wow. All right.
It's weird to imagine a world where sci-fi wasn't mainstream.
Yeah, I suppose you could. It's funny that you could be like Ray Bradbury. It's Star Wars. You know what I mean? Naturally led to Star Wars, brought into the mainstream. Thank you, Ray Bradbury.
That, like, all our movies are superhero movies at this point. We're just like, well, that's not sci-fi.
Yeah, that's kind of its own terrible thing.
It got worse.
Ray Bradbury, stop. Don't do it.
Thanks, Uncle Ray. If he could go back in time and kill one man, it'd be himself. Now, before the opening line, which I always start with, after the title page, there is a page that just says Fahrenheit 451, colon, the temperature at which book paper catches fire and burns.
Oh.
Which is equal to 232.78 degrees Celsius.
Okay.
That's hot.
So it's quite hot.
That's hot.
So it would be hard to set fire to a book in the oven.
Yeah, that's true, but not impossible.
Not impossible.
You gotta crank it.
You gotta crank it, but you could cook a book. That's cool.
That's how they invented cookbooks.
Now, I wondered if this was actually true, and the good people at Slate.com answered my question. Enough people could Google it. Not quite. Bradbury's title refers to the auto-ignition point of paper, the temperature at which it will catch fire without being exposed to an external flame. So if it's in a room that's hot enough, it will just combust.
Hey, I think most things would. Like, I think if you're in a room and it's 230 degrees, I'd catch on fire.
Catch on fire just to take me out of it.
Yeah.
It says, in truth, there's no authoritative value for this. So there's been a few experiments.
So we don't know.
Oh, so we've got an unreliable narrator.
Yeah, that's okay. Right. And we could do some of our own research, which I like.
You could, we could burn a book. That is exciting.
Yeah. Starting with Fahrenheit 451 for the bullshit that it spread. So that's the title page. Well, there's a page after the title page that says that. Then there's the opening line, which is, it was a pleasure to burn.
Oh, that's good.
Great opening line.
Yeah.
And the opening line is really what gets you.
Yeah, hooks yeah.
Best of times, worst of times. You know, you need those iconic opening lines.
It's that's true. Right. Yeah.
And it was a special pleasure to see things eaten, to see things blackened and changed. With a brass nozzle in his fists, with a great python spitting its venomous kerosene upon the world, the blood pounded in his head, and his hands were the hands of some amazing conductor playing all the symphonies of blazing and burning to bring down the tatters and charcoal ruins of history.
Woof.
And we're off.
Yeah, we are off. What's that other famous opening line? This is going to sound fake, but it is true. Something like, bang, 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 three shots ripped into my groin and I was off on the greatest adventure of my life.
What book's that?
What is that? That's a famous opening line from
that's
something.
That's your autobiography. That's how you lose your second ball.
Something, yeah, like, bang, 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 three shots ripped into my groin and I was off on the greatest adventure of my life.
I've got it here. Yeah. From World Book Day, 30 great opening lines from literature.
Thanks,
bang, bang,
Book
bang.
Day.
Four shots ripped into my groin and I was off on the greatest adventure of my life. Very well remembered.
I was close, yeah.
That is Sleep Till Noon, Max Schulman, 1988.
There you go. I don't know what the book's about, but that opening line grabbed me clearly. Yeah.
You're just obsessed with groins.
Yeah, I am a little bit.
Yeah, that's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an intense start to an adventure.
Yeah,
but
you can do it for the next episode.
Yeah, there you go.
Book.
Oh, it looks like, so that was the year he died. Sleep Till Noon, 1950.
Okay.
I was also thinking, wow, he wrote this since the year he died.
That's impressive.
was this autobiographical? Yeah. Three shots in the groin.
Greatest adventure of my life. Death. The end.
The final frontier.
Well, of course, so this is how it starts. I love that opening line.
That's good.
It was a pleasure to burn.
Oh.
Now, our story takes place in an unspecified city in the US in a distant future.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can we decide? I think it's Minnesota.
I want to say Delaware. Yeah. I don't think Delaware's a city.
Yeah,
whoops.
It's somewhere in Delaware.
I've got a real affinity for Spokane, Washington.
Great choice.
It could be.
Yeah.
Someone takes a bus to St. Louis.
Okay.
I don't know if those are close, but sure.
But I mean, I suppose he'd be a really long bus ride.
Yeah, he could be a long bus ride.
Or really close St. Louis.
They moved it for the movie.
So we meet our main character there. That's the guy burning shit. Guy Montag.
Mm.
Referred to throughout as Montag.
Mm, it's good.
That's a blech.
You don't like Montag?
Blech. Okay. That's a gross, not a gross name, but it's just a name that you spit.
Montag.
Yeah.
I think what I don't...
There's no poetry to it.
It does sound like he could be like a guy that chews tobacco or something.
Montag.
Yeah, if Montag. He was a cowboy, I'd be down with it.
What if he was a 1970s cop, like the TV show's called Montag?
Oh, yeah, that's
yeah,
good.
That's good.
That's
yeah.
good.
Montag,
you don't
want to
mess
P.I.
with this guy. Well, he actually works as a firefighter.
Okay. Oh, well.
But in the future, the job, as we know it, has changed quite a lot. See if you can see the subtle differences.
Okay.
You see, the houses are now fireproof, so there's no real need for a team of firefighters to put out fires.
But who are getting cats out of trees?
And it's really broken down the firefighting role into only one thing. You're right, they do many, many jobs. But in this, they're like, hey, you don't need to put out fires anymore. But instead, they are charged with starting fires.
Oh,
see, big difference.
In this world, books have become outlawed, and firefighters' job is to seek them out and set fire to them in the houses that the books have been found in.
Oh. I'm sad that for a brief second, even though I kind of already knew this is where it was going.
From your Wikipedia career.
Yeah, for a brief second, I thought it was going to be a world where houses, instead of catching fire, catch water. To burn them out.
The only way to stop that was to put the whole city underwater.
Yeah.
It is in Atlantis, USA.
Yeah.
Montag wears a helmet symbolically numbered 451.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
After his work, he showers luxuriously, it says. Love a luxurious shower.
That is good. That's the only kind I have.
It's always luxurious.
He's busy setting fire to books all day.
Yeah,
exactly.
Apparently he smells like kerosene all the time, it says.
Mm.
He then slides down a golden fireman's pole and walks home.
Is he hot?
I'm imagining that.
Yeah.
Firemen are hot.
Firemen are hot.
Yeah. Whether they're burning literature or getting cats out of trees.
Yeah, they are. And he can't check this feeling that he's been having lately. Like someone's been there just before him.
Okay.
Waiting for him and then disappearing just before he gets there and looks around. Got it slightly uneasy.
What does that feeling feel like?
Spooky.
but how do you, is it like he's seeing stuff or is he just vibing?
No,
like,
it's a vibe, yeah. He's just like, oh.
Because people have been in...
No thoughts, only vibes.
I just think people have been in most places. You know what I mean? Like, there's nowhere I arrive where someone hasn't been previously.
Yeah, so like an obscure mountaintop, and he's like, finally, I've shaken that feeling.
Yeah.
Well, then he then meets his neighbour, 17-year-old Clarice McClellan.
Mm-hmm.
McClellan, I should say. And instantly, it's clear that she's not like everyone else.
Oh.
This is their opening convo. Of course, he said, you're a new neighbour, aren't you? And you must be, she raised her eyebrows from his professional symbols, the fireman. Her voice trailed off. At this point, it does sound like a porno. But how oddly you say that, he replies. I'd have known it with my eyes shut, she said slowly. What, the smell of kerosene? My wife always complains, he laughed. You never wash it off completely. No, you don't, she said in awe. And from this point on, I don't know why, but I started imagining the whole book as an anime. Yeah. Some slightly stilted conversation.
Yeah.
Like not very human.
No, you don't. Ah. Little anime grunts after everything. Yeah.
And apart from the whole book burning thing, we quickly realized that this isn't society as we know it. Society does not seem to have free thought or have meaningful conversations.
Oh, okay.
Oh, so everyone is having these weird little anime combos.
And even this, she speaks more freely than anyone else.
Whoa.
He's encountered her and is like, oh, you speak differently.
Yeah.
You see, in this society, they drive very fast jet cars.
Ooh.
And I love how that is explained by Clarice, the young girl, to Montag. She says, have you seen the 200-foot-long billboards in the country beyond town? Did you know that once billboards were only 20 feet long? But cars started rushing by so quickly, they had to stretch the advertising out so it would last.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
So if you're just
looking like a flip book?
Yeah. Whoa, that would be... And also, like, a billboard's great because you pay attention to it briefly because you should be paying attention to the road. But if it's that long...
It's there for, like, 25 minutes telling you a full story.
That's great.
So they get talking, and Clarice challenges a few of Montag's ideas about things and asks him if he reads. Mm. And he says, that's illegal.
I actually burn books. Yeah. So that's
I think we've established that I am a fire man.
No, that's weird. And she talks about nature and things like that, and he's like, what's wrong with you? You're a bit strange.
Yeah.
We don't talk about stuff like that in this society. Before leaving, Clarice asks him one question, and that is, are you happy? And he says, am I what? Only to find that she has gone. But this question... She goes, she disappears to her house.
Whoa.
And this question really sets off our guy Montag, and he really sets in motion the rest of the story. He sort of can't get that question out of his mind. Am I happy?
Damn.
Because at first he's like, yes, of course I am. But slowly he realises he's not.
I think you could ask that of anyone and do that to them.
The more you think about it, what is happiness?
I never want to be asked if I'm happy. I don't ever have to examine that. You know what
I
mean?
You always just want to be content.
Yeah, exactly.
So Montag, with this new information on board, goes home to find his wife Mildred lying in bed, sleeping, listening to...
Is her name Mildred Montag?
It would be.
Mildred Montag.
Millie Montag, my friends call me. She's like already asleep in bed, listening to seashell little radios that attach to her ears that pump in an electronic ocean of sound, of music and talk and music and talk, it says here. Yeah, I've copied that in.
So are these like little headphones?
Yeah, they're like little earbud headphones, like before I imagine that they were widely available.
Yeah,
he's invented
those.
And like these, they're sort of a brainwashing technique that she listens to a lot.
Okay.
It's clear that there is... At the very least, communication problems in this marriage, because he's come home having this existential crisis and she's just in bed listening to the brainwashing radio.
That sounds nice.
Yeah.
That sounds beautiful. It's the 50s.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how men and women communicate.
That's what a relationship was. The man has the existential crisis.
The man has thoughts.
Yeah, the woman's brainwashed by seashells or whatever.
Well, it only gets worse when getting home in their dark bedroom, Montag discovers that his wife Mildred has overdosed on sleeping pills.
Oh, no.
He trips over a container and realizes, hang on, that's empty. So he calls for medical help and two guys show up who aren't even medical doctors. And they don't really give a shit and are totally just going through the motions. They pump her stomach and then use a machine to replace all of her blood.
Are they... Even though they're not medical doctors, is this their job?
Yeah, this is their job. They talk about it like they've come there. They talk about it as if they're like guys that service a vending machine.
So suicides are so common.
Yeah, this happens all the time. All night they save people like this.
Yeah.
It's so common that they've come up with a machine just to save people from overdosing on sleeping pills.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they come through and then... Montag's like, is she going to be okay? They're like, yeah, she'll be right. Sorry, mate, we got to go. We've got to go do another job down
the
road.
More people to do.
Slap
busy
her on
night.
The thigh, and they're like, well, she's fine.
Society is not doing so well.
Yeah, evidently.
And during the background of all of this is the threat of nuclear war. In the book it says...
Add a little bit more.
Yeah. It's more stress. A radio hum somewhere. War may be declared at any hour. This country stands ready to defend itself. So that's
All right, that's the vibe.
That's just hanging over them the whole time.
For sure.
But his wife's overdose and being revived really shakes Montag, and he keeps thinking about Clarice, the girl who sort of blew his mind a little bit, and what she said to him.
With her really deep personal questions.
Yeah. Are you happy? Oh, God, I didn't know.
Let me get inside.
Over the next few days, Clarice faithfully meets Montag each night as he walks home. She explains that at school she's seen as an outcast because she doesn't fit in with the others.
That's because you're asking too many fucking questions.
she asks why, but not how, when they instruct her to do something.
Oh.
And this means that she has to go to therapy for her odd behaviour and strange thoughts.
Okay.
And Montag begins to look forward to these meetings, almost like he's waking up to the world for the first time, until one day Clarice disappears.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Just before we go on, is Montag horny for Clarice?
No, I think he's horny for the truth.
Okay, good. No, just because they established that she was 17 and I was like, does it get gross?
Yeah. No, it doesn't get gross.
All right, good.
That's good. He just...
I needed to know because that was really changing my perspective.
I was also getting those vibes early on. I'm like, what is going on? She's 17. This is weird, man. This is weird. Do not meet her after work every day.
Yeah. But if it's just for the existential crisis,
that's all right.
An existential crisis can come from anyone. If a child of 5 grabbed my face and was like, "Are you happy?" I don't know.
I pay a therapist to not think of this.
Yeah. I thought it would be even more confronting for 5-year-olds. Oh, do you sense something that I don't? So Clarice has disappeared. Montag has no idea what's happened to her. Meanwhile, he confronts Mildred about the overdose, which is his wife, which she cannot remember at all.
Because she was overdosed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she even denies when he brings it up. He's like, "How do you feel after last night?" She's like, "Oh, pretty good. I had a great sleep."
It was great. One of the best nights of my life.
He's like, "Oh, how about that bit where you overdosed and I had to get 2 people to revive you with a special machine?" She's like, "That never happened."
No.
Nice try.
She treats him like he's silly.
Gaslighting him.
Another event rocks Montag when at work he's called to an old woman's house who has a stash of books. Montag and his firemen, led by his boss Captain Beatty, douse the place in kerosene, and the men are prepared to set fire to the house, and they begin a countdown to zero to get everyone out of the house. When the homeowner, the old woman, appears on the porch, she's holding a match and tells the men that they can stop counting down, and she lights it herself.
Whoa.
Fucking boss.
Lighting her books and herself completely on fire. There's an inferno. She's engulfed in flames.
That's cool. I mean, it's upsetting, but it's cool.
Yeah. It's a badass move.
Yeah, for sure.
And Montag is shocked by what he's seen. Why would the woman choose to burn with all her books, he starts thinking. He's also secretly grabbed a book and hidden it in his pants.
Oh, my God.
Montag.
What book?
A copy of the Bible. Ever heard of it?
Of all the books you could grab.
And at this point, you're thinking, is this secretly a Christian book?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it is.
Okay,
good. It does feel a bit like this book saved his life.
Yeah.
But maybe it kind of does. We'll see. He's not sure why, but he gets home and he hides it under his pillow. Great hiding spot.
Come on, Montag.
I'm so sorry to interrupt. I'm just so confused at the idea of, like, no books. Does that mean no writing whatsoever? Like, do newspapers and magazines exist?
Yeah, no, it's all replaced by TV and radio are big things.
Okay.
Because, like, in my mind, being the future is now, but it was then past, like, the idea of being like... There's no books, only Kindles.
It's not like they're not annoyed at paper cuts.
It's like, what are the rules here?
Furthermore, no, there's no sort of written literature at all.
Okay. Just to establish.
Except for 200-foot billboards.
But maybe they've just got a picture on them.
Yeah.
Does that mean people are illiterate? Can he read the Bible?
Yeah, like, could you leave notes for one another?
Yeah, they can read.
Yeah. What about tattoos that are words?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, what do they mean?
Can you keep a journal?
Yeah.
Like, when does a journal become a book?
When do they got to burn my diary?
Yeah, I don't
diary?
Think you could keep a diary. I don't think.
Oh, okay. Just because we need to establish all these questions before we get arrested.
The good news is it sounds like podcasts.
We're in the clear.
Yeah, good.
It'll have to be presumably pro-government propaganda, but
still. I'm not sure if you can have a podcast about a book.
Damn it.
Well,
you're
out.
I don't know.
We're still in. It's our podcast about nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing is big.
That's
they
good.
Love. These people love nothing. They're brainwashed with nothing.
We would be very famous.
We would be very popular, yeah.
So he asks his wife Mildred if she's heard anything about Clarice the neighbour. and is saddened to hear that
Clarice never exists.
Sorry. It does feel like that's building to that. But she says, oh, that girl, yeah, apparently I heard her family moved away because she was struck by a car and killed.
Sounds like the secret police got her.
Does, doesn't it?
It does, just yeah. A little bit.
Fucking book police.
Montag, after all these events, so his wife tries to commit suicide. He sees this woman set herself on fire. Clarice, his only guiding light in these dark times, has been taken out by a car. He's had enough, and the next day he calls in sick to work. He speaks to Mildred, trying to have a bit of connection with his wife, but really she's only interested in her parlor wall, which are giant TV screens the size of walls.
Whoa. Sick. That's cool.
So big flat screens, but the entire wall is a screen.
That's
like a projector. We're like, a screen.
Yeah. Okay. In the 50s, they're like, what?
That's, yeah, I guess back in the 1950s, your TV was like the size of a cracker or whatever. Yeah.
She has three and is hoping to have a fourth wall installed soon.
Aww, that's cool. Yeah, good on her. Just a big Mildred.
TV room.
Surrounded.
TV floor, TV ceiling.
Yeah, where do you go?
You can just lay in it and constantly absorb media. I'd be down for that. You could watch six shows at once.
Yeah, or the one show six times.
Yeah, that's how you do it. Well, she's not giving much attention to Montag, who is in the midst of this crisis. He asks her if she can remember when and how they first met, but she cannot.
Uh-oh.
So these people don't think about memories like this often.
Oh.
One person who does suspect Montag of having a crisis is his boss, Captain Beatty.
Damn it, Beatty.
Who is a bit of an interesting character we learned because he used to be a reader.
Oh.
Now he's the guy that burns the books.
Oh, self-hating book reader.
Yeah, self-hating book reader. That's so sad.
Oh, trash. He explains to Montag that it's natural for a firefighter to be curious about the books that he's burning.
That makes sense.
Mm.
And then he explains how books began to be banned in the first place. Because he doesn't know for sure, but he senses that Montag's a bit off. And he's like, I think you might be one.
He's an old hat at this. He knows the vibe.
Yeah. You seem like a reader. Originally, people began to lose interest in reading after the advent of television. And that some minority groups objected to certain books that they found offensive, so they were banned. But then other people found other books offensive, so they got banned.
Oh.
Pretty soon, all the books began to look the same as no one wanted to risk offending anyone.
Oh, okay.
He says, quote, it didn't come from the government down. There was no dictum, no declaration, no censorship to start with. No. Technology, mass exploitation, and a minority pressure carried the trick, thank God. So it's like, people rallying against different books. And eventually it was felt that books and learning in general created inequality and unhappiness, and so all books were banned. Funerals were also banned as they were seen as unhappy and pagan. Now everyone is just burnt after they die.
That rules.
Yeah, good. Good. Funerals are long and annoying.
Yeah.
Okay, you're seeing some glimpses of hope in our future.
Yeah, it's kind of good. I like this weird Kindle future.
But I'll sacrifice books if I don't have to go to a funeral anymore.
No, it's all right. I've given up books willingly.
True.
And as for firefighters themselves, it says, quote, they were given the new job as custodians of our peace of mind, the focus of our understandable and rightful dread of being inferior, official censors, judges, and executors. That's you, Montag, and that's me, says Captain B.
I really like that in this world. What came first, the banning of all literature or houses becoming fireproof? Because that changes what happened here.
Yeah.
But it's also it's so funny to imagine houses become fireproof, so they're like, the firefighter is obsolete. And then they're like, we need someone to burn books. And they're like, well, we got a lot of firefighters hanging around. Yeah. And someone's like, well, those skills aren't transferable. No, I don't know.
I think they know a lot about fire.
You can put out a fire. You can start a fire.
You always hear the fire bugs turning out to
be
firefighters.
Good point.
That's right. They chose all those ones, found them out, and then fired everyone else. Yeah.
They're like, oh, you actually enjoy saving people's lives? Job for you.
That's right. And then on day one, they'll look around. Everyone here is also a fire starter. You're all fire.
Prodigy just starts playing.
Welcome, Twisted Firestarters. On his way out, Beatty tells Montag that in theory, he's like, I don't know if you got any books, but if I knew someone who had books, I'd give them 24 hours to read them and see for themselves that there's nothing in them. And after that, I'd come back and I'd burn them for him.
That's a bummer that he got the Bible, because that's like that's kind of unreadable.
Yes, exactly. And it's the Old Testament too.
Oh,
it's really difficult.
Yeah.
You're going, what is this?
What is he
saying? If there are no books, how do they learn to read? I'm so sorry. The world building in this is... is nuts.
How did they learn to read?
That's a good question.
Maybe, no.
Paul, what was it, fucking Dan Bradbury every time he's trying to write this book? And I'm like, okay, hold on, one little world-building question.
Dan, question.
Maybe they just put subtitles on all the TV screens.
Yeah, all right.
There you go. That makes sense.
Yeah, that's all I needed.
It's a great point.
Yeah.
I was reading.
They could have explained it away by being like, there's like state newspapers that are full of propaganda that people, you're still going to need to read the news, even though it's, but then I guess if cancel culture killed all books or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he certainly rallied against that very early on. With that, so Beatty's like, have you got any books? I'd read them if I was you just for a bit. So with that, Montag begins a long and frenzied night of reading. He turns to his wife Mildred for help and confesses to her that over the previous years, he's kept a stash of books in the air conditioning vent in their roof. So he's been hoarding them.
But he hasn't been reading them.
No.
That's funny.
He teeters the line.
Yeah.
He's almost a bad boy.
Almost. Mm. And now he wants to read them and see if there's anything in them. But she prefers her TV and can't understand why he'd want to take the risk of reading.
Mm. Yeah, I'm with Mildred.
It's a big risk.
Yeah. You don't know what'll happen.
And the TV has the wire, so.
That's true.
And that's the end of part one. Then part two is The Sieve and the Sand.
Oh, it's a good title.
Hey, book cheaters, just Dave here letting you know that this week's episode is brought to you by the good people at ExpressVPN. Now, recently I was out walking my dog Humphrey and I got a call from a company and I had to give out my credit card details over the phone and I was freaking out that someone would overhear me and use my credit card details. So I was like whispering and like running 10 meters and then saying the next numbers. I probably looked out of my mind. But if you are on your phone or your computer without ExpressVPN, it's like giving out your details for other people to overhear every single time. Don't be that person. Because internet service providers like Comcast or Verizon know every single website that you visit. These internet service providers can sell this information to ad companies and tech giants who then use your data to target you. No matter how quietly you think you're whispering with the incognito modes or whatever, they can still track your history. That's why when I'm on my phone and my laptop, I use ExpressVPN. I fire up the app and I click one button and I've automatically got a secure encrypted tunnel between my device and the internet, and then other people can't peep on my online activity. If I'm using public Wi-Fi and I want a bit more protection, say I'm doing a bit of online banking, I make sure that ExpressVPN is protecting me. And like I said, I have it on my phone and my laptop. You can even put it on your router so everyone who shares your Wi-Fi can be protected at the same time. And you too can secure your online activity by visiting expressvpn.com/bookcheat today. That's expressvpn.com/bookcheat. And you can get an extra 3 months for free. I recently did this and now I don't have to worry about anyone peeping on me for a whole nother year. So one more time, to get 3 months extra free, you can go to expressvpn.com/bookcheat.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Part two is The Sieve and the Sand. Realizing that Mildred can't help him, he remembers that he has the phone number and address of a retired English professor, a man called Faber. About a year ago in the park, he'd met Faber. The two got talking and Faber eventually admitted that 40 years ago, he'd been a professor in the last arts college before it got shut down.
Oh, that's all quite recent that this has happened.
Yeah. So,
okay.
I guess it would make sense that his generation could read. But maybe not the future.
Yeah, that's true.
Thinking that he may have the last...
Why did he need to explain to him that? Sorry, I'll stop talking.
Thinking that he may have the last printed copy of the Bible, the copy that he took from the woman's house who was set alight, Montag heads to Faber's home. At first, Faber is suspicious and thinks Montag is setting him up. After all, he's a firefighter. They're being
fair.
You got any books? He's like, no, sir, of course not. You know I'm not allowed to
books
read.
Books are a man, dude.
But eventually Faber agrees.
Are you a firefighter? You got to tell me if you're a firefighter.
Yeah, that's a rule. But eventually, Faber agrees to help him understand books. Montag is surprised to hear that people read them for leisure in the past.
Because it's the Bible.
This was fun for people?
Yeah.
Okay.
Faber says there is nothing magical in them at all. The magic is only in what books say, how they stitch the patches of the universe together into one garment for us.
Whoa. You can tell books are knowledge you can wear. Okay.
Montag then says, this afternoon I thought that if it turned out the books were worthwhile, we might get a press and print some extra copies.
Whoa.
To which Faber replies, now if you start talking that sort of talk, that might get me burnt for my trouble. The only way I could possibly listen to you would be if somehow the fireman structure itself could be burnt. Now, if you suggest that we print extra books and arrange to have them hidden in firemen's houses all over the country so that the seeds of suspicion would be sown amongst these arsonists, bravo, I would say. And he's actually joking there.
Okay.
It's like, oh, you want to print books, huh? Why don't we go even one step further and start planning books? And then Montag's like, I love that plan.
It looks like you've thought about it, and we are going to do
it.
He's like, well,
I was only kidding. And then Montag's like, that's the plan. So that becomes their clandestine plan. Faber will contact a printer and begin reproducing books, and Montag will plant books in the homes of firemen to discredit the profession and to destroy the machinery of censorship.
What's a printer still doing? What's he spend his time doing?
It's one of those 90s ones where it's like...
He's been waiting for work for 40 years.
Yeah.
And because this is the future, let's not forget, Faber gives Montag a device called the Green Bullet that he has invented, which is inserted into Montag's ear and allows him to hear what books. Faber hears and also secretly talk to Montag.
Oh.
There's a lot of that, like, sci-fi, oh, we're predicting the future stuff going on in this book, you know? Like when
it's some kind of dystopian novel.
No, but like when a sci-fi author would be like, what if there was clam shells you could put on your ears? And you're like... We got that now. That's headphones.
Yeah.
What if there was a green bullet you could put in your ear and you could hear someone talking?
We got that now. That's headphones.
It's headphones.
He just invented many different types of headphones. What if there's some device that sort of cancelled the noise around you? You could wear it over your ears.
That's headphones.
Okay, yeah. What if there's one with like a little remote on the wire that you could turn the volume up, huh?
It's all the one device, Ray Bradbury.
He's obsessed with headphones. So that's the plan. And now he's got the green bullet in so Faber can hear what he hears and also secretly talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
Montag goes home and finds that his wife is hosting two of her friends round. Good. Bit of a girl's night in.
Yeah, that's good. She needs it. She's had a rough week.
She
OD'd. She forgot about it.
Yeah. Watch. She's getting that new screen.
She's got that new screen and her husband's thinking of books.
Yeah.
Well, they are watching the giant screens of the parlor walls and Montag tries to engage them with what he sees as civil conversation, but they are not interested.
Because the big TV's talking.
And he snaps. And what do you do when you've truly snapped? You grab a book of poetry and start reading it out loud. And that's what he does.
You know what? I know some, like, cis straight white men who would. So, yeah.
I think that what a great way to ruin someone's TV watching party.
Stop talking.
And now a bit of Keats. So the women are very confused by what they hear. Remember, no one has heard these books in their lifetime before. Yeah. And now he's quoting poetry at them. And Faber, who's the guy listening in on the green bullet, is very alarmed by what he hears. He's like, shut the hell
don't
up.
Read poetry,
no,
dude.
They are not appreciating this. Mildred tries to dismiss Montag's action as tradition, a tradition that firemen act out once a year. They find an old book and read it as a way to make fun of how silly the past was. Faber tells Montag to confirm this lie. He's like, say yes. But one of the women is so shocked she begins to cry when he reads Dover Beach by English poet Matthew Arnold.
I see.
She's really upset by it.
Is she moved or like...
No, traumatised.
Reading.
Trying to watch maths. Mildred's friends leave in disgust and break off their friendship with her.
Whoa.
God damn it, Montag.
Montag's
your wife had friends.
Yeah.
Come on.
This isn't just your life you're playing with, Montag.
And she's very upset by this, as you can understand.
Fair
runs into the bathroom and Montag can hear her rattling a bottle of sleeping pills.
He's Mildred.
Like, this has backfired spectacularly. Montag hides his books in the backyard before returning to the firehouse, his place of work. And Montag hands Beattie a book to cover for the one he believes that he stole the night before. because he thinks BD knows I stole the book. I'll give him one back and say, this is trash, throw it away, and then I'll be off the hook.
Good. Did he just leave his wife? Like, just OD?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Just wanted to check.
He's just like, babe, I'm going to work. So, yeah, he's now at work. He thinks he's getting away with it with BD. A fire alarm sounds and BD picks up the address from the dispatcher system. And they drive recklessly in the fire truck to the destination. And they get there and BD says to Montag, "Something the matter, Montag?" "Why?" said Montag slowly. "We've stopped in front of my house."
Oh, no. Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness. End of part two.
Did he not recognize his address? Fuck, sorry. Like, there's just so many times, like... Huh.
Yeah, why did he not?
No, I think it was the captain got the address.
And he didn't
started
hear
driving
it.
There. Yeah. And then Montague's like, huh, my neighborhood. Huh, my street. Huh, my building.
Interesting.
Huh. Okay,
oh,
my house.
Slowing down.
It's,
yeah,
it's weird that when I just read all that poetry out loud to people, that there were ramifications for my actions.
Montague keeps picking, like, he picks a book, he picks the Bible. He's like, I gotta read something to people. He picks a poem. You need to ease into poems.
Yeah,
you can't just start on
poems. You gotta start with C-Spot Run.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you go straight to Genesis and then poetry.
Yeah.
That's difficult stuff.
Exactly.
So we're now into part three, the final part, which is called Burning Bright.
Mm-hmm.
Mildred gets into a cab with her suitcase out the front of their house, and Montag realizes that his own wife has betrayed him. She's the one that's called in the firefighters.
Damn it, Mildred.
Montag, I'm leaving you. There are too many books in this house, and I will not stand for it.
Captain Beatty orders Montag to burn his own house down.
That's an intense order.
Yeah.
That's an intense thing, dog. Can you not just burn the books?
And rather than use the usual salamander engraved lighter that they usually start fires with, they pour kerosene on stuff and then light it, he instructs him to use a flamethrower.
All right, making an example.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, kind of cool that he gets to use a flamethrower.
Yeah, pretty badass.
That's pretty sick.
That's cool.
That's fair. That's a cool weapon.
Beatty says, "Your house, your cleanup."
Oh,
sick love. Handing him a flamethrower.
Yeah.
Saying that.
Beatty was planning that on the drive
home. He was like, I fucking know.
How am I going to...
God, this is such a good line.
Because Beatty also, like, now he knows that he's been, like, fucking double betrayed.
That's
because
true.
Because he got given that book and he was like, don't even think about it.
Right.
Didn't work.
Beatty's now pissed.
Shit.
So, Montag, he does burn everything. And when he's done, Beatty says, "When you're quite finished, you're under arrest."
Whoa.
So he's not off the hook. Beatty then also realizes that Montag is the green bullet in his ear. And he says that he will track down that guy too.
Oh, no. Oh,
man.
Now he's like, I've got my friend in trouble. This old professor. So Montag points the flamethrower at his boss.
Yeah, probably was actually a bad idea for Beatty to give him
a horrific weapon.
Yeah.
But rather than back down, Beatty starts to goad him, calling him a fool and quoting Othello at him to make fun of him.
Beatty, hang on. You can't be quoting famous plays.
That's right.
In our book-free world.
Yeah.
He's a complicated character. He reveals that he used to be a big reader. And with that, Montag pulls the trigger and burns him up real good.
Whoa.
Now you're the book.
Yeah. But then later on, Montag starts to think, hang on, did he goad me into that because he wanted me to kill him?
Oh, that's heavy
stuff. He gave me the flamethrower.
He
started trash talking me.
He set it up.
Maybe he did this all on purpose. But anyway, Montag then knocks out the other firemen who are with them and
he
doesn't flame them.
Anyway, no time to think about that.
And he goes to run, but he is overcome by something I haven't explained in this world, and that is dogs.
Uh-huh.
Not regular dogs, but robot dogs.
Oh, yes. That's cool.
Like those ones we had in the 90s.
Yes.
Well, these are eight-legged robots used by the firemen to track down and punish people who are hiding books. Basically, they are given scents of their target and then let loose to track them down, and they inject them with needles, either with something that paralyzes them or kills them.
That's so horrific.
Yeah, what part of the dog is needles?
Yeah. That's crazy.
But they keep them like dogs in the firehouse.
Oh, are they painted like Dalmatians?
Yes.
They should be. And they when they're not on call, when they're hanging out, you know, when you're waiting for the fire alarm to go off, they take bets. They bring in like chickens and mice or whatever, and they let the robot dogs, and they say, How long before they kill that chicken?
That's so intense.
Yeah. This world.
They're doing dog fights for fun.
Yeah. Well, you can do dog fights with robot dogs, right? Not against chickens.
Yeah, they're probably not robot chickens.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Before he died, Beatty had set a hound to track Montag, and now it appears and attacks him.
Uh-oh.
It injects him in the leg, which paralyzes his limb, but he's able to fight off the dog and destroy it with the flamethrower.
They shouldn't have given him that flamethrower.
I know. What were they thinking?
You should make those dogs out of the material they're making their houses out of.
Yeah, true.
Montag then rescues some books he had hidden in his backyard because he's burned his whole house down, but he had a stash out back.
Lucky.
And he runs for his mate, Professor Faber's house. He discovers that another dog has been put on his tail, as well as a news crew and helicopter who aim to televise his capture and demise.
Mm. So news does exist.
Yeah. But so, televised and radio news,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. So and news stuff, it's stuff like that promotes the state. Like, this man is a criminal now. Yeah, watch us kill him.
This man knows how to read.
and people love that.
Oh, like, sick.
It's huge.
Sick. Mm. Bring back tar and feathering, you know?
Yes.
Society would love that. Faber tells Montag to go to the countryside where he can contact other exiled book lovers who formed a secret community.
Oh,
some cool. Kind of book club.
Faber's plan. Is there a podcaster there? Or... Faber's plan, he says, is to take a bus to St. Louis. He's the guy.
Oh.
He's either going from Spokane, Washington, or from Delaware, which I think is a little bit closer. And then he'll join them later. That's what he says. I'll meet up with you guys later. But there's still the problem of the hound.
Yeah, that is a problem.
It has Montag's scent. He stays one step ahead of it by watching people's TVs through their windows. Because everyone, this is the biggest story.
Yeah.
Man on loose, man reads books, we kill man.
Yeah. So he can concise to the point. I love the news.
Yes, exactly. And he can see where the hound is because the helicopter's following it. So he's like, I'll just avoid that bit.
Yeah, clever.
And to keep the hound from picking up his scent, he wades into a river and drifts away with the current. He washes ashore in the countryside, so he goes quite a long way out of the city, and he's overwhelmed by what he sees, all the smells, the sights, and sounds. Mm. He also sees five men sitting around a fire, the leader of whom welcomes in Montag. You see, the current has conveniently carried him.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right there.
Yeah. They've been watching him on a portable TV. This leader of the group introduces himself as a man named Granger and gives Montag a drink that will change his scent so that the dog will give up looking for him.
Oh, my God. Scent-changing juice.
I think it's like even
perfume.
Like it changes his DNA or something.
That's cool. Yeah.
Just take a shower.
Yeah, you know that he's just handed you like a bottle of piss or something. Yeah. Seriously, drink it all.
It'll change your scent, dude.
Now you smell like my piss. But because everyone is watching on TV back in the city and because... the state don't want to let society know that a man got away. A scapegoat is shown on TV being killed by the dog. And an announcer then declares that Montag is dead and a crime against society has been avenged.
I see.
So everyone's happy. But now he's off the hook. And Granger says, welcome back from the dead.
Oh, there's a lot of cool lines in this.
A lot of cool lines.
A lot of people with the lines here.
And Montag then meets the other men of the group who are all former intellectuals, an outcast society dedicated to preserving books. You see, they have perfected a method of recalling word for word anything that they've read once, and each of them is charged with remembering a certain classic work. They then burn the work after,
because
they're afraid of getting caught. But now
it's up in their brain. Yeah, clever.
And they refer to each other by their book. It's so nerdy. I am Plato's Republic.
Oh, yep. No, it's bad. It's bad.
I like to read Marcus Aurelius. Mr. Simmons is Marcus. Such a nerdy thing.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad.
But it's also funny to imagine somebody being like, I'm Plato's... what was it?
Plato's Republic.
I'm Plato's Republic. Would you like to read Plato's Republic? Like,
chapter 2?
I can just read any bit of it.
And the other guy's like, I'm a Mills and Boone romantic novel.
Yeah, exactly.
Granger explains that they are part of a network of thousands of people all over the country who have different books stored in their memories.
That's great.
They are sitting, waiting, and storing this information for a time when society will change and needs books again. This way they won't be lost.
They can write them down. That's clever. Yeah, they've figured out a way. Got to give it to them.
And it will be Montag's job to memorize Ecclesiastes from the Old Testament and Hebrew Bible.
Is that because he picked up the Bible
before? Yeah, that was his book.
He's like, oh, God, you guys have some really fun ones.
You want to have a narrative.
Yeah, I got to do the Bible. Okay.
Okay. And do you think there's like a hierarchy of memory?
Yeah,
like
surely.
If I know War and Peace and then I discover that Jackson has memorized like a short story, yeah. I'd be like, this is so unfair.
Yeah, or a collection of short poems.
Yeah.
Oh, it's mostly haikus, about 10 haikus.
I know 10 haikus.
But they're all up there.
Yeah,
I'm doing my part.
Yeah, exactly. It's just as important. It's as important.
A haiku is not as important.
Is that what you're saying? War and Peace?
Some kind of censorship. Yeah.
This guy's not one of us. Yeah. Let's kill Tolstoy.
Hi, my name's 10 haikus.
Suddenly they see jets flash over the city that drop their bombs. The nuclear war that was hanging over the story is upon them.
Oh, damn.
We forgot about that.
Yeah. I didn't think that was real. Okay. Yeah.
The intellectuals watch as the city is vaporized by the explosion. They're hit by the shockwave and are mostly safe from this explosion, as is Faber, who, remember, was on a bus to St. Louis.
That's right. Yeah. The fabled St. Louis.
But everyone else that Montague ever knew is instantly killed. He thinks of his wife Mildred and suddenly is able to recall, we first met in Chicago.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's nice. Cool.
The next day, Granger tells Montague and the others about the legendary Phoenix and its endless cycle of long life, death in the flames, and rebirth. Symbolism.
Mm. Yeah, there it is.
He adds that the Phoenix must have some relationship to mankind, which constantly repeats its mistakes, but explains that man has something the Phoenix does not. Mankind can remember its mistakes and try to never repeat them.
Damn.
I mean, the key word there is try.
Yeah.
The men head towards the city to help the survivors rebuild from the ashes. And the final line is Montag committing to memory a quote from Revelations. It says, "And on either side of the river was their tree of life, which bare 12 manner of fruits and yielded her fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations." Yes, thought Montag, that's the one I'll save for noon, when we reach the city. And that is the end of Fahrenheit 451.
That's a book.
That is definitely a book with words.
Things happened.
Yeah. It's definitely one of those books that... What am I trying to say?
I'm sure it was very important when it came out.
Well, it's very relevant, I suppose, to when it came out.
Yeah.
In 1950s with, like McCarthyism and naming names. And I guess it's always going to be a little bit relevant. But it is funny. I don't know. Yeah.
I think any, like, post-war kind of version of the future is always really fun to compare what we actually have to what they think is going to be.
Yeah.
And I think that idea of, like, you know, books don't exist and there's all this censorship and what? Like we've kind of gone on the opposite where there's, like, so much content.
Yeah.
So much everything all the time.
Yeah, now everyone can get their opinion out.
Yeah, for sure.
For better or worse.
that's a much better way to phrase it than what I was going, where I was like, too many idiots are allowed to talk.
Yeah. But it is always funny to look at stuff in so far in the past that predicts the future. But he did get the TV screens, earbuds, and we all like to drive jet cars, am I right?
Yeah.
I love my jet car. Yeah, I was thinking how funny it is.
Jackson, you can't drive.
Yeah, okay, well, I don't drive my jet car. But yeah. I get drive in cars with
you
other
You don't drive
people.
A regular car, you drive a jet car. Yeah. That's fine.
That's all that
You're
matters.
Saving yourself.
And it's so funny to imagine, like, yeah, he predicted so many things, but it, like, it just falls off toward the end. Like, I don't know, he predicted TVs, earbuds, dogs with syringes.
But then I was thinking, you know those videos that you see from Boston Dynamic of those, like, robot
trucking?
That could be a dog, and in a couple of decades' time, that thing could be coming for us with needles.
They can put syringes on it for reasons.
More legs.
More legs make it quicker, I guess. Yeah.
I think stable, because it's always wobbly.
Yeah, they are pretty wobbly. But then every now and then you see them pull off, like, dance moves that I could never even dream of.
That's
a real slap in the face.
Yeah.
That really, really hurts. But, yeah, apart from that, do you see any other message for the now times,
for
the 2021s.
Oh, the nowsies.
I mean, I think, you know, literature is important.
Yeah.
It's good to read.
It did feel like that he was getting onto a sort of a cancel culture sort
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, it does being like,
this minority group was offended, this minority group was offended.
Yeah.
But I guess we've had some of that.
Yeah, it is.
But
difficult.
Then some of it's also been really good.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think it's the
so
kind
maybe like stopping hate speech is good. But
yeah,
like,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Right?
For sure. It is the kind of like, it is weird to hear that when that is the like slippery slope argument you hear when they're like, yeah, exactly. Like, well, we got to put a trigger warning on this. Soon we'll put a trigger warning on everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then we know books and we'll have to set fire to any book that we find. It's like, it's sensationalist, yeah. I guess. Yeah. But
I think it's like, I was talking to my mum recently and in the, you know, COVID pandemic that we're in, like talking to my mum and being like, were there like anti-vax people, were there kind of that mentality when you were younger? And
yeah.
She's like, they did exist, but they were so far on the fringe that it didn't really matter. And so then nowadays she's so confused by that kind of movement where I guess we kind of grew up in it a little bit more where people had not the right, but the stupidity to be like, science.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe it's an opinion.
For sure. And I think as well, like the fact that everybody can have their opinion means that people can reinforce each other and find little communities and get in that little cycle of those little like echo chambers, and then you have like an anti-vax movement or whatever.
Tend to blame social media. And I was having this conversation with a couple of artists the other week where they were like, oh, social media is like, you know, such a indicative of the fact that we are all narcissists now. And I don't think that's inherently true, because I think I remember being a kid, and if anyone went on vacation, I'd have to watch their slideshow of them being on vacation.
Yeah, that is true.
Like, I think we're inherently all protagonists in our own reality, and we want to think of ourselves as the protagonist. We want to think everyone's interested in what we're doing.
For sure.
But the problem with social media is that, yeah, it becomes an echo chamber, because it's very easy to find like-minded people. And in terms of what we're seeing now with a lot of hate speech, it's really easy for hateful people to find other hateful people.
For sure.
Probably 20, 30 years ago, if you were hateful, you'd literally have to go find a group of Nazis somewhere.
Yeah, that's right. And it's hard to just advertise that on the mainstream.
Yeah, you're like, oh, you a Nazi?
Yeah.
But now, not that bad. Like, people are not ashamed to do that.
Yeah,
which is crazy.
I think this weird thing happened where all of a sudden, all of humanity with access to an internet connection was having one big conversation. But like, in my life, I pick who I talk to, because I pick the people I like talking to.
Yeah.
But I don't have a choice anymore. You know what I mean? I am having a conversation with the rest of the world by virtue of being online. And that was probably a mistake. You know what I mean? I think the internet, I think we should be regretting just ever figuring that out. You know what I mean?
So rather than burning books, we should be burning computers.
Yes. Yeah, burn the cable.
Yeah. Burn those lines, the cables the sharks are always attacking or whatever.
Just pull them up.
But there's so much good stuff that the internet gave us, like the internet.
Yeah, but would we be better off without it?
I think we're allowed to have Netflix and streaming services.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to watch TV on a schedule.
But you can go to Video Easy, get a VHS. It's pretty good.
Fine.
You can make Video Easy.
VHS, I'm past DVD.
That's what this was always been about.
Get rid of the internet. Blockbuster's opening up again. We're going to get VHSs. It's going to be great.
Make a documentary about you, the first Blockbuster.
Yeah. The first Blockbuster back. That's right.
What I found really ironic when looking into this story was Fahrenheit 451 has been constantly banned from several school districts.
That's so
because
funny.
It uses the phrase goddamn.
Yeah.
And the school board felt that this language was inappropriate for students to read. And then over time, the publisher, without Bradbury's knowledge, started changing some of the words. And by a few decades had passed without him knowing, 70 different words had been changed in the book.
That's so funny.
And he had to be like, Whoa, no. And went back to the publisher to recall the other books to try and
That's amazing.
Get his original version
70
out there.
Whole words.
70 whole words.
It's just so funny to write up. You'd like, this is the exact thing I didn't want to happen. Didn't you read the book? This is what it's about.
Like, no, I didn't read the book.
Absolutely not. It would feel good to burn a copy of it, though, I think, a little bit. It would be a bit fun.
For
you know?
Spectacle of it.
Yeah.
If we were doing the test, if our oven was hot enough, you'd have to use that book.
Of course, 100%.
Out of respect.
Yeah. Isn't there like, I feel like I've seen a post shared around, funny talking about internet or whatever, but it's a copy of this book but it's got like a match striker thing on the side.
On the spine.
So on the spine of the book so that you can strike a match on it and I guess set the book on fire. I don't know why you would want that, but that's, yeah, I've seen a copy of the book. With, I don't know if it's
that's,
actually, if
that's
it works.
Like it's been designed by someone who got a, like they heard the word firefighters and were like, yeah, we can figure it out.
Yeah, we can make that work.
Fire. Yeah, I know fire. Yeah. It's fine. Book is a big matchbox. I know.
You'd regret setting fire to a book you owned, even if that was what it was designed for. You'd be like,
I've set fire to books. It's fun.
Yeah, what book?
Like any old book that I don't think an op shop would want. Not because
it's the pretty slow checks.
Yeah, not but no, that I should contextualize that. I'm not just setting books on fire. Yeah. I set all my rubbish on fire.
Okay. So in a bonfire with
in a bonfire
additional rubbish.
With all my papers. Yeah. There it goes
did,
my books.
It did just sound like a hobby, the way you phrased it.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, I just set books on fire and then I was like, what kind? And you're like, just ones I don't think op shops want. I was like, what? How are you determined? What are you saying?
15 years and I've never seen you burn a book before. Yeah. How did you keep this secret?
Would you say that it's a pleasure to burn?
Oh.
Ooh, it is. I'm indifferent to the burn.
That's fair.
Thinking about those marshmallows.
Yeah, they're a pleasure to burn.
I tell a lie.
Yeah.
Because nothing was more invigorating than burning my year 12 textbooks.
Oh, yeah, that does sound good.
I think that's
yeah.
allowed.
Yeah, yeah.
That is good.
That felt...
I had a book explode in the back of a car once because it got too hot. That's not really a catching
what?
Fire. Well, it didn't explode, but like the glue melted and the book just kind of came apart. It's not quite the same
imploded.
Thing.
Imploded.
Yeah, I suppose it's more imploded.
In the future, we melt books.
Yeah. We leave books in hot cars. Yes. They're still readable, but they're just not together anymore.
There's no cover on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, well, it's you can still do it, but... That was good, actually, because, like, I remember that book had exploded in the back of the car, and we were on a drive somewhere, like a road trip, and then I needed a book, so I collected all of the pages together, and I still read it.
Like
I still
a made journalist it yeah. trying to make sense of the case.
Like, stuck it all together as best I could. Big sheaves of paper. Yeah, it was good.
Your childhood, man. Your fucking childhood. Yeah.
That was not that long ago.
Oh, Jack.
I would have been in my 20s, definitely.
Oh, well, there's one thing left to do, and that is we usually give the book a score out of 5.
Okay.
How we feel about it.
I don't know. It's considered such a classic.
Yeah.
And the language is nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. As for the story, yeah, like maybe a 2.
Yeah, I was going to say 2.
2 out of 5.
Yeah, but I give a 5 out of 5 to Millie
Vanilli.
Yeah, Billy Vanilli. Mildred.
Oh,
I
yeah,
give
yeah.
5 out of 5 to Mildred, who I love
yeah.
and would die
oh,
for.
She had a TV room. That is cool.
Yeah, that yeah. is sick.
Imagine getting that fourth wall.
Oh, damn. And a TV floor and yeah. a TV ceiling.
But is there a door in one of the screens? How is she getting in?
Yeah, I guess one would have to have like just a little nook that you can...
I think
like,
you don't
crawl
leave.
In like a
yeah.
dog door.
Yeah.
You don't need to.
You don't need to leave.
Do that and you die in there.
Yeah. JB Hi-Fi seals you up in there. It's your tomb.
You count of Monticello or whatever yourself. Perfect.
So both of you giving it a 2 out of 5. I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's fair. You got to read the beautiful
yeah,
words.
Yeah. I usually give pretty high scores too.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Just mainly out of guilt. Taking the author's work.
It did feel bad to give it a 2. Because like I know it's famous, but yeah. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like that interesting a story.
Maybe some... I like to remind myself that things aren't necessarily bad. They're just not for me.
Yeah, true.
Great.
True.
Yeah. Love that.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Not for me.
I've already done Brave New World on this show. I also didn't quite feel like that was for me.
Yeah, oh, that's all right.
That is a slog of
a
book.
And yeah. of the 3 big dystopian ones, I think 1984 left to go.
Mm.
So we'll
Hopefully
see.
Hopefully that one is yeah. for you.
If that yeah. is for me. I mean, I actually have read that one in school before.
Oh, okay.
And I remember quite liking it.
Well, it's got a lot of
so
funny
we'll,
words in
so
it.
We'll see. Well, not by the time I'm through with it. 70 words will be changed. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Fahrenheit 451. What a book.
Thanks
what a
for
book.
Having us.
you guys do millions of podcasts.
It's true.
An inhumane amount of podcasts.
Yeah, great stuff.
Just filthy amount.
Things that will not be banned in the future. Yeah.
That is nice to know, but should be banned in the future. You know?
We found out that a couple of our podcasts
oh, yeah.
got put in a... in a vault in an archive.
Oh, what's some archive? Some,
they were doing a study. It was like they were doing a study of 2 million podcasts.
Yeah,
and we were one of them.
Yeah,
and so we, for the future, people will have reference for us.
Yeah, hundreds of years in the future, people will be able to find.
I love that.
What the hell is it?
It was this Wisconsin University, I think, something like that.
Yeah.
An episode of Duga One got added to the Australian Film and Television Archive.
That rules!
Yeah, that's sick.
That's so exciting.
For the future.
I mean, they don't pay you to do it, but.
No, it's a nice thing to think of, like, gold. Kind of like a time capsule. Yeah. You'll dig it up one day, and then you'll be being like, digs, digs, digs.
Yeah, it was because they were putting something together about video games, and we did an episode on the video games crash in the 1980s.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's so cool. An episode that I can't remember much about, but...
Must have been a highlight for them.
That's right. It's in the archives for some reason.
Yeah, I can't find it. It's somewhere.
Yeah. I love it. Well, if we can't find it there, we could probably find it on Sanspans Radio's website,
yeah,
right?
sanspansradio.com. Head there. Click on any of them. They're all good. Yeah. Most of them are good.
We're in most of them.
Yeah, exactly. What are some of the programs that you guys
do? Well, I think one of the ones that I'm in that I think is in the archive is Thumb Cramps, which is a video game review podcast where me and the two Joels, who I think have been on the show as well before, we each play a video game that week, or one of us gets, you know,
distracted and doesn't.
Yeah, or has a fight with a telephone company, or on one episode I reviewed being way too sick to do the episode. This is pre-COVID. That episode rules. I'm so genuinely angry to be there. I think I was like, you know, like when you're so sick that the idea of moving makes you like want to cry. I'm like that sick, and they're like, Jackson, how's being sick? And I'm like, God. How do you feel? Bad that I'm here. So yeah, listen to Thumb Cramps.
Thumb Cramps and Why Am I Sad, which is our mental health podcast where none of us are professionals, but we're taking on your problems.
Great. Fantastic. There's heaps of those podcasts. Very funny stuff.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm a big fan. So thank you very much for joining me. If you want to get in contact with me, I am at BookCheatPod on social medias.
Beautiful.
And yeah, if anyone wants to burn this podcast, please feel free. Go ahead.
Tag us. Yeah.
And you can get in contact with me and suggest a book. There's a link in the description of this episode. Like I said, if you want to tell me why I should do a book, I will get to it. And just to finish this off, I really hope that Anna Langdon from Bristol has finally been able to have that conversation with your
teacher. She's been stalling for 6 years.
Yeah,
finally.
Let me know how it goes, Anna. I'd love to know how well that conversation goes. Just, you know, if you just say, you love to burn.
Yeah. I love burning books. It's
so good.
It's fun and it's funny, yeah.
It was an instructional kind of like Anarchist Cookbook-esque situation.
All right, I'll be back with another episode in a couple of weeks. But until then, I'll say thank you for listening. And as I always say, books forever!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.